Welcome back to Unpopular. Happy New Year. It's the first show of 2024. I actually did nothing for New Year. I feel like everything is just like a blur right now because I just have like so much to do before I go to the US and it's all just like blending together and I'm actually not getting that much done, to be honest, because this podcast is like several days late. You know, when you have so much to do that then you kind of like don't end up doing that much, that's where I am right now. And I actually just went to start recording this at my computer with my whole like super expensive podcast setup. And like literally I pressed play and I'm like, I can't do this. And now I'm in bed on my Page summer house microphone. I feel like the Marlo Hampton today drained me meme, even though like all I did was go to the gym, have a nap, and then order fried chicken from this Vietnamese place. But anyway, we're getting into the swing of things. 2024. Let's go. Sound very enthusiastic. I am. I'm just like, whatever. Things have been kind of like dead over the holidays anyway. Like, you know, all the media and the TV stuff sort of died down for a while, as it does at the end of the year. All of the shows went on hiatus, and I feel like it's like just picking up pretty much like as of today, because last night Salt Lake City finale was on. I know that The Traitors UK season 2 just came back, and I am so excited for that. I feel like what will happen with that is I might not even end up watching it, because sometimes when there's a show I really like Succession, I get so obsessed with having to have the perfect environment to watch it and like the perfect mindset to experience it properly, where then like I just don't watch it. Because I never saw the last season of Succession because I just never felt like it was the right time. And then like so much time passed after it, I'm like, I don't know if I can go back. So let's, you know, pray for me that I'm actually going to watch The Traitors UK season 2, because I feel like I've been like dying for it for an entire year now. What else is going on? There's a new Epstein Files drop that's out. I actually don't know if I'm even going to bother diving into that one though. I'll see what people are saying first. I'll see how much like interest there is and if anything's hooking me. Even though I like my conspiracies, I have never been like a huge Epstein guy, because it's kind of like, look, he was obviously murdered for one, and it's weird that they even say that it's suicide. He was clearly murdered, and he was clearly working for either like the CIA or Mossad, and that's never gonna come out. Like, that's the real tea, is whatever intelligence agency he was working for. So, you know, he could blackmail these people. So it's kind of like finding out which pervert celebrity was getting a massage from a 16-year-old isn't the real story. The real story is like, which intelligence agency were you working for, and who did you actually blackmail, and what was that blackmail? Did it influence government policy? Did it influence like military action? Like, that's the meat of it. And we'll never, ever find that out. I mean, they killed him in front of the whole world, and like, no one did anything. They were just like, oh, it was suicide. I mean, and everyone knows that it wasn't suicide. Like, that's why there's that meme, like, Epstein didn't kill himself. Like, obviously, everyone, even if they're not conspiratorial, I would say majority of people of any political alignment are like, yeah, I don't think he committed suicide. I mean, there's probably some people that do think that, but I feel like it's a small amount. And like, yeah, no one did anything. I mean, Julian Assange is still like locked up for however many years. So we're never going to get like the juice. So yeah, like the gossipy part of me is kind of like, okay, like which celebrities were on the island with the girls? But then I also know it's a smokescreen, so I don't care as much. What else before I get into the latest, you know, TV and things I've been watching? I went to my mum's 60th birthday the other night, and it was actually okay, especially compared to the last two ones that I went to. You know, now I guess since this was the third one that I attended, it's about, yeah, I guess I've been here for over 3 years now, back in my hometown, and usually I don't think I did go to her birthday parties before, or maybe she didn't have them. Girl, I don't know. All I know is that I've been to the last three, and this one was okay. The last two were not great. If you've been following me for years at this point, you might remember when I went to the first one, and it was when I was still living with her during COVID times, and me and my friend left early without saying goodbye, and my mom was furious. I actually regret nothing, because what happened was that was back when I was like doing my podcast and very stressed out. And I'm like, don't listen to my podcast. Like, don't talk to me about it. I mean, that was the rule since I had it. Like, I never even told her that I launched one, and then someone else told her, and then she's like listening to it. And I'm like, stop listening to it. Stop telling people that I have it. Stop telling people to listen to it, etc. Like, please respect my privacy. And then she tells like, not only everyone in our family side, but like her husband's side of the family. And then when I was humorously venting about all of them on the pod, like, they all heard it. Like, the most mortifying was when my mom's husband's family came to stay, and they had like a crying baby. I like them, by the way. I didn't even say anything nasty, but I was just kind of like, I was stressed out being in that house again, like, you know, during COVID times, and it was really hard to record. And I was very like a real stickler for like getting the show out, like, you know. I think I did them weekly at that point. So I was a real stickler for having it out same day, same time, every week. And there were just always people coming in and out of the house. And, you know, they had a newborn baby, and it was in the bedroom next door, but like, it would cry all the time, and the crying would like go through the wall. And like, I couldn't, you know, record properly. So anyway, she told them, yeah, he has a podcast, and they were listening to it on their drive home. And then I'm like complaining about the baby crying, and I was just like, for fuck's sake. And then they took it as like I'd been like trash talking them all, which I hadn't even been doing. And then also my uncle, who was snoring through the wall, like, it was the snoring was like, you've honestly never heard any, like, it was like a medical condition, like, get to fucking hospital. Like, it was so bad. And I really like my uncle, but I was like complaining about the snoring. He heard it as well. So then when I went to her birthday party, those family members that I'd been saying stuff about were there, and I was so anxious about it, because I was already like weird about, like, you know, the podcast. They're two different lives, and I didn't want them intersecting, and I don't like my family and my business at all. You know, I like people to know about me what I tell them. So it's like, why are you going in my personal life? Like, worry about your own shit. Like, don't worry about what I'm talking about or what I'm doing, okay? Like, don't you have your own life? So I'm just very all about that. And oh my God, I can't wait to be on the other side of the fucking world, and then no one can be up my fucking ass about anything. But anyway, they were there, and I was so nervous to like run into them, which was like, it was more in my head, because my uncle and everything, that he's actually like really nice. Like, they would have thought it was like funny, but I just was, I don't know, it was just all wrapped up in like my mom and stuff. And it made me so self-conscious and anxious. And I knew that they'll probably like bring it up to like make fun of it. So I went with my friend, and then we sat away from everybody, and then we left early. And I thought, okay, like, we're out. And, you know, everyone was getting like pissed. I mean, as in like drunk, not angry. Everyone was getting like, you know, drunk at the freaking pub that the party was at. And I thought it was fine. And then my mom's calling me, where are you? And I'm like, oh, you know, we just went out to get some like, you know, fresh air. And then she's like, you're coming back, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah. And then I was like, fuck. And I said to my friend, like, we have to go back. She's calling. And my friend was like, I'm not going back in. And I'm like, please. And she's like, no, like, because, you know, we don't want to be around a bunch of drunk, rowdy, middle-aged people getting shit-faced at the local pub. Like, my friend doesn't really drink either. It's not our scene. You know, my family is, they are, not all of them, they're not all bogan. Definitely my mom. Like, my mom is, she's kind of like Kim from Kath and Kim, honestly. So not like junkie bogan, just like, yeah, definitely not junkie bogan, but like, just, I don't know, like bogan. And, you know, it's at a pub, and like, I just don't want to be around like the, it's just so over the top, and it's too much. And like, my friend wouldn't go back. And I'm like, well, I'm not going back in like alone without, you know, a wingman. So I just like went home, and this is when I was still living with my mom. And then, you know, she sent me all these abusive text messages, and, you know, screamed at me when she got back, and you're so selfish and all this shit. And, you know, just like, whatever. Like, I got her a nice present. We stayed for dinner. I wished her a happy birthday, By the time we left, like, she was getting plastered. Like, she wouldn't have even fucking noticed. I didn't know why it was such a big deal. But anyway, that happened. And then I tried to be on my best behavior for the birthday last year, you know, kind of to make up for the one that I left and, you know, supposedly ruined. So she has it at this awful RSL that she loves. I don't know why she loves it. If you're not in Australia, if you're not Australian, you won't know what a RSL is. I guess it's like a country club, but like not nice, like a bogan like version of a country club, I guess, is what an RSL is. Is that how you would describe it? And she loves this one here. And it's full of like full-blown retirees that are honestly like close to death. Like they probably should be in the nursing home. And, you know, they go there to watch the horse races on TV. And I don't know why she insists on going there. She's always like, it has the best view in Albury. Like, it does have a nice view of the golf course behind it, but I don't know if I'd say it's the best view in Albury. And even if it was the best view in Albury, it's not, like, the view doesn't offset the rest of it. Like, the atmosphere, you have to line up to order. Like, it doesn't have table service. And then everyone, like, gets there at, you know, like, 5:30, and you can't order until 6. And then it hits 6, and there's, like, a line out the door of geriatrics waiting to get their food. And it's like, can't we just go somewhere with like a bit of a vibe? Like, we don't have to go to the nicest place in town, but like, why the fuck do we have to go here? And also, like, my mom's like a young 60, okay? So she's 60 now as of the other night, but she'll go out and like, you know, watch a band and go out drinking, go to a bar. Like, she'll go to music festivals, not like doof doof festivals, but like, you know, age appropriate, like festivals for more like, you know, middle age, and has, I don't know, you know, like singer songwriters and, you know, country people. She went to one. Oh my God, it was so bogan because they covered it on the, they covered it in the media and at Daily Mail and stuff. And it was just like people with like utes, and they were all like dressing up with like mullet wigs. And my mum dressed up as Kath and Kim. And I'm not even going into her outfit. I was like, you cannot wear that. And she's like, yeah, I'm going to wear it. I was like, no, don't do it. But anyway, she insists on going there, and it was a sit down dinner. So, you know, I couldn't bring my friend. Or maybe if I had insisted, I could have, but I didn't want to, you know, I'd already subjected my friend the year prior. So I didn't want to like put her through it again. And then at the sit down dinner, it's like, okay, now I have to fucking talk to everybody. And, you know, that's hard for me because you've got to make conversation all night. So even if the people are nice and you like them, which I do, I actually like all of her friends and, you know, I actually like my family pretty much and, all of my mom's friends and stuff. So it's fine, but it's just like, you know, how long do we have to talk for? Like, isn't it enough to just be like, hey, oh my God, you're doing well. Great. Like, see ya. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have all night. So I had to go through that. And then this year it was another pub, definitely not one that I personally would choose. She actually goes there, my mom, a lot. And she'd be like, oh my God, you know, come down to Brady's. And I'm like, no, like there's a couple of pubs that I will go to in town, and it's not that one, you know, they're actually the nice ones. But she wanted to go there and they organized it. So it's like, fine, you know, it's your birthday, wherever you want to choose. And I got my friend to come, and I actually was not nervous this year because I didn't have to worry about running into people that I talked shit about. It wasn't a sit down dinner. Again, like I said, I do like her friends and my family. And so I was like, hey, it'd been like, you know, nice to see everyone. So, you know, I was fine with it. Obviously I didn't want to talk to everybody. Like, yes, it was a lot going around making forced conversation with people that I haven't seen in God knows, you know, years and years and years. I haven't seen you since you were this tall. Meow, meow, meow. And I was like, okay. But for the, like, most people were fine. The thing that I was hesitant about actually was having to answer like the same questions about me moving like 100 times, because I knew my mom had like told everybody, even though I don't tell people, but I knew she's fucking probably told people that she hasn't talked to in 40 years what I'm doing and all about my life, which is why I try to keep things private from her. And like the visa process, it's taking longer than expected. I'm still like paranoid that for, like, something will happen and I won't be there past my, you know, I have to do this like 3-month trial thing. And I'm just like, because I don't have like finality on like 100% of like, yes, like, you know, you have a contract for like 3 years and I know that it's like a full on thing. I'm still worried that like something's going to happen. I'm going to get like sent back early. So I can't like get my head around just committing to be like, yep, this is like what I'm doing. You know what I mean? So then people are like, oh, you're moving. And I'm like, well, yeah, I am kind of, but I don't know if I'm, how long I'm going to be there. And I'm just was like having to explain it over and over and just like all night. Like, I just feel like I'm very much in limbo. So yeah. Whereas like really what I want to do is just know what I'm doing. And then if anyone asks me, it's like, yep, I'm moving, so long suckers, like bye. But I can't really do that. So yeah, it was fine. Everyone was nice. I just hate being around my mom when she's drunk. Well, I hate being around drunk people, period. But like, especially my mom, cause she just gets like so shit faced. And like, we're in the pub, like everyone's had a few drinks, not me or my friend, because we're like so straight laced, but like everyone else. And like I said to my friend, I'm like, girl, I'm like, do you see how like I just like don't fit in around here? Like, do you get it? And she's like, yeah, because like I was looking I was looking at like family members and stuff and like people just getting fucking plastered and fucking fill up the wine again. It's like, it's like 5:30 on a Tuesday, but I'm just like, this is so not me. But there was one awkward moment and I looked like such an asshole and it was like unintentional. So my mom's best friend who organized it, she was like, you know, you've all got to get up and like give speeches. And I'm like, no. And then like, I tried to refuse. And then she's like, no, like it's your turn now. And like, I wasn't prepared. And well, it's probably better that I didn't know, because then I would have been freaking out. But I don't know, maybe I would have written some, I don't know what I would have done, but I just would have been better to be prepared. But I just like got up there and like, they weren't like formal speeches. You know what I mean? It wasn't like everyone's like dead silent and you're giving this like long emotional speech. Like everyone was like doing it off the cuff, but I didn't want to be up there. Like the mic stand, because I'm tall, you know, like I was like taller than everybody. I was like towering over them all. And the mic like wasn't even at mouth height. So I'm like awkwardly like leaning down, looking like, you know, a hunchback. And I just want to like get it over with. So I was just like, hi, you know, thanks for coming, everyone. Like, you're all amazing and happy birthday. Yay. And like, bye. And like, it looked like I was like purposely, like, it looked like I purposely went up there to give like the most sarcastic, like fake speech ever, which I didn't. I just wanted to like get off the podium and like get it over with and just, oh yeah. And actually when I walked up, I was like, well, I didn't know that I was going to be giving a speech, but like, I didn't know that I was going to be giving a speech, but I actually like wasn't trying to be rude. And I'm not going to get up there and give like a heartfelt speech in front of, you know, just a bunch of people at some fucking bogan pub in Albury. Like, it's just not going to happen. And also in front of my mother, I have to be, I mean, she wouldn't have remembered anyway, because she probably had so much to drink, but like, you know, I have to be very guarded around her. Cause you know, any vulnerability will be manipulated and used against me and be turned into Bates Motel, like smothering and then like gaslighting if you even address it. So you know, I just was not going to go down that path. And then I did kind of feel bad because it looked like I was intentionally being a bitch when I wasn't. But then I remembered, I'm like, she didn't even thank me at her wedding, which was the turning point in our entire relationship. Cause I was the only one that, I mean, that's a whole long story, but I was like the only one that supported her despite all of these other things. And then I didn't even get a thank you at the wedding. And then her husband thanked all of his kids who were like against them being together and had been like difficult. I mean, they're all fine now, you know what I mean? Like, it's all smoothed over. But at the time there was like family drama and I was the one that like put it aside to like champion the union despite everyone causing issues. And I didn't get a thank you at the wedding and I was like, nah. And then just things were never the same. So then when I thought about that, I'm like, yeah, I actually don't care that I like botched the speech. So yeah, anyway, that was that. Okay, what I really want to talk about is the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City finale, which was so incredible. And you guys know that I do not really do Bravo on the main show anymore. That is for Patreon. And I actually have a new really long Patreon episode. It's over an hour of like the best and worst reality TV of 2023. And then some stuff about my personal life, etc. So if you want to check that out, patreon.com/unpopularJP. But I am making an exception because, one, I actually need topics to talk about today. And two, this was so good that I feel like it needs to be discussed. I mean, this has been the best show. I've been recapping it pretty much on Patreon most weeks, and I've been really behind this season of Salt Lake City because it is so amazing. And you guys know that one of the reasons that I put Bravo-related things on Patreon is because I can't stand being around the freak Bravo trolls and Karens that are just always on my fucking dick about everything and are obsessed with me and are weirdly obsessed with the shows to the point that they obsess over podcasters and like troll them and stuff. And like, even before I recorded this, I kid you not, I was following this account on Instagram. I recently followed it. It's called like by Wig Hello Drama, I think. And it's just like, it posts housewives clips, and it was posting stuff from the new episode of Beverly Hills. And of course, Garcelle was like, everyone's racist. So I was responding to that. And then, you know, I commented on it and I posted it on my stories, but I commented on one of the posts. And I don't always comment on those housewives accounts. There's only one that I really like, and then a lot of the other ones I try not to comment on because it's just like people keep responding, especially if it's a contrarian comment. That is usually what I'll do. People just keep responding to it for like weeks, and it's just like they're so lame and they're so unfunny and they just have nothing witty and no original thoughts and no original opinions, and it's just embarrassing. And then it's like a week later and I'm still getting notifications of some fucking like Kate Gosling bitch from, you know, Ohio or whatever, or going, you're a racist. So I just like usually try to stay away from it. But I commented about Garcelle because I think Garcelle said that Dorit was a Karen, and I was like, no, Garcelle's like the biggest Karen of all, calling the fucking diversity and inclusion manager every time somebody, you know, confronts her. And then like some annoying Bravo fan loser comes onto my page and is like commenting on one of my posts about like Sydney Sweeney, going, oh, so this is proof you hate black women. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And then they're like referencing like my Instagram stories from like previous days and like things that I've said before, but they don't follow me. And I'm like, oh, okay, wait, this is some weirdo that like doesn't follow me, but it's like watching my Instagram stories and like knows things I said. Like they're probably listening now, which that always, again, that's why I have to like stay away from them, because I'm like, oh my God, you like literally hate me and you think I'm like, you know, a this and a that, which is fine. But you're like watching my stories. You like know my opinions on things. You're like triggered because I have a different opinion on housewives to the point you've got to like come onto my fucking page. Like they were bringing up Kelly Dodd Drunk Wives Matter. It's like, is this 2000 and fucking what, 2021 or whenever the hell that was, like years ago? Move the fuck on. Like these people are so embarrassing. So I blocked them because I'm like, I'm not letting them, you know, look at my content, fucking weirdo. They'll probably go and leave me a review now. This triggered conservatard, racist, KKK. Like I'm sure they'll say something like that because they always do that. And then I was even like, this is obviously before I recorded this, and I was already planning to talk about Salt Lake City on here. I was kind of like, should I even talk about Bravo on this fucking podcast? Because anytime I do, and I don't just put it on Patreon, these fucking roaches crawl out of their fucking shit-infested nests to just like bring turmoil and like frustration to my life. They're so disgusting. But anyway, this season of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, so beyond, it was just like next level. It should have been on HBO. It transcended the Real Housewives. It was just perfectly edited, perfectly cast. Everything about it was good. I was more shocked than anybody because I'm like the original Salt Lake City hater, and it's just continued to deliver week after week. And it culminated in this explosive, very heavily edited finale, which we'll get into in a second. But it was the perfect ending. And they expose this new girl, Monica, who's joined the show. It's her first season. and they found out that she ran this account called Reality Von Teese. And again, if you guys are on my Patreon, you guys know that I used to talk with Reality Von Teese all the time, because as the OG Jen Shah hater, I would always post negative things about Jen Shah constantly, like when she would do her race baiting, like, you know, remember she would call everybody racist if they called her out for, like, you know, she would like attack, like hit people and like scream and smash things. And then they'd be like, oh, wow, it's really aggressive. You can't call a woman of color aggressive. Like, always doing that. And then she said it was like racism when like Homeland Security came up. She was fucking scamming old people and disabled people. I was on her ass since day one. So I followed Reality Von Teese, and I used to post negative shit about Jen Shah all the time, and they would follow me. They would like all of my stories. Yeah, by the way, back to that dumb troll. I hate that I'm even giving them attention, but I've been posting on my stories tagging Monica, because Monica actually follows me, but she follows a bunch of people. And I've been like, come on my podcast. I didn't really think that she would be able to, because I mean, you know, I do this for a job, so I know that they're under very tight contracts, and it can be hard to get people, especially in the situation she's in. So I wasn't really thinking it was going to happen, but I posted a couple of times tagging her so she would see it, going, please come on my podcast. We used to talk when I was Reality Von Teese. And that fucking dumb Bravo troll said something like, and stop begging Monica to come on to your podcast. She's a person of color, so she would agree with Garcelle. And it's like, actually, Reality Von Teese follows me and used to like all of my problematic stories all the time, and called out Jen Shah for race baiting and stuff. So please, like, shut the fuck up. But Reality Von Teese was an amazing account. And from what I remembered, it really just focused on Jen Shah, because on the episode, Heather finds out that Monica, basically what she finds out, if you didn't watch it, I assume most of you did, but if you didn't, this girl Monica came on the show. She was running, she'd been running this troll account for years in secret that was exposing Jen Shah, who used to be on the show, and then she ended up getting arrested by like the FBI because she was running this insane telemarketing scheme targeting the most vulnerable people in society and robbing them of their like life savings by selling them these like fake businesses. Like, it was disgusting. And Monica had been her assistant, and Monica became her assistant, then started an account to expose her, and then would leak these like videos of Jen Shah like abusing her staff, and just would always leak like tea about Jen Shah. It was dedicated to taking her down, and that's why I followed it, because I just despise Jen Shah. She's the worst housewife ever, the worst person ever on reality television, pretty much. And on the episode, on the finale of Salt Lake City, Heather Gay, she was like, you know, this account started out to go after Jen Shah, but then it, you know, targeted and bullied all of us. And I'm like, I don't think it did. Like, look, it probably posted a few like shady things about them and reposted people's stories and stuff, but it certainly didn't go, from what I remember, it certainly didn't go after them in like a targeted way, in the same way that it went after Jen Shah. And the theory with all of this is that like Monica became Jen Shah's assistant pretty much to like get on the show. And it went deeper than this actually, because in season one or two, I think it was season two, Meredith had a clutch purse stolen from her store, and people thought that it was that maybe Jen Shah had stolen it, or someone that worked for Jen Shah. And then they pulled up the security footage, and it was like Monica in there, but it was when Monica looked completely different. She had like blonde hair, and she had like a different surname. I mean, this woman, Monica, has had like multiple identities. This is like true crime. Like, it's so beyond even the craziest stuff on Housewives. So like, this is why it's so good. And I've gotten so many people to watch this season who don't watch Housewives, or used to watch Housewives and just are over it and just think it's sort of boring and generic and never got into Salt Lake City, etc. And then anyone that I showed this season to just thought it was like peak comedy, peak drama, peak everything. But she's basically this like con artist of some kind. And it came out and she was running Reality Von Teese. And I went back through my messages with Reality Von Teese and we were like, you know, living it up and messaging each other back and forth at times. And they were liking all my stories. And then I actually unfollowed them recently just because they hadn't posted for a long time. This is before I realized that it was like Monica. But apparently Monica was running it with like other people as well. It's a whole thing. And it was a very interesting finale because the Salt Lake City Housewives, the show has always sort of been about trolling and being obsessed with social media and performing the role of being a real housewife, because Salt Lake City, it premiered, I think, right as COVID kicked off. So we were definitely in lockdown, I think. And that's when everyone became very, very online. That's really was such a huge turning point, as I've discussed before, for the Real Housewives fandom, because it just made everything so online. Like, that was the real explosion of like the meme accounts and stuff. Like, before that, you did definitely have like fan accounts, and Danny Pellegrino had a famous meme account, and they were out there, but it got to a different level. And the social media became such an integral part of everything. And then when Salt Lake City premiered, it was like they were all fans of the show. They were all like reading all of the comments. They were performing. Like, they're a crazy bunch of women. So they're all like real characters and they're a very odd bunch of women naturally. So it's like you have these weirdos that then on top of that, and you know, with all the Mormonism and stuff, they're self-aware and they watch too much Bravo, and then they go, okay, this is what a real housewife is supposed to do. And for a long time, it was a detriment to the show. Like, it's kind of why I never liked it, because it felt very performative at times. And then they would also do things that just didn't make sense. It was like hard to even figure out, like, with how many of them would defend Jen Shah. It was just strange. And then to have it kind of exploding this way after 4 years, and you have a woman that had literally been such a fan that she ran a secret troll account and then like infiltrated this group of women and came onto the show. And like, Monica is like these weird Bravo trolls. I love her. Like, she's an icon, but she's kind of like these weird Bravo trolls. And then seeing the audience reaction is interesting too, because people are loving her. I think there's casual viewers that are like, this woman's nuts, and you know, what she did is like, you know, way too far. But I would say the fandom, you know, the people that are in the Facebook groups and the meme accounts and stuff, a lot of them are like loving her and going, oh my God, yes, she gave us like the best season. She understood the assignment. Like, she brought the drama, which is like all true. But then again, they like hate Lisa Rinna for doing so much less. Like, Lisa Rinna will ask someone a question who's like been lying or go after someone. She's disgusting. I can't watch her. I've never seen reality TV sink this low. And then you have Monica, who is operating at such a level of like toxicity and insanity and scheming. And now she's like a fan favorite. It's so strange to see how the fans react, because they don't have any rules. You know what I mean? Like, when it comes to these people, they just personally decide who they like or dislike, and then you can't do anything right or you can't do anything wrong. It's like Garcelle. Like, Garcelle's constantly doing wrong. Garcelle's the fakest and most manipulative. And I mean, still, she's into her, what, third or fourth season at this point, Garcelle? Another race issue. That's a microaggression. You can't call me angry, even if I am angry, but you can't say it. It's just like too much, but she's just praised endlessly. You know, as we've seen on the Housewives of Beverly Hills this season Paris in Love season 2 with Kathy Hilton, what a monster she is. And then Denise Richards' girl. All I can say is Lisa Rinna was right about everything. But she's hated. And then Monica, people love. And I saw an interesting post, because Monica has been sort of portrayed as the villain on the show, even though people are loving her. And it's this season, sorry, I'm all over the place, but this first season of Monica, it's definitely up there with like Kelly Dodd's first season, Leah McSweeney, Brandy Glanville, like all these people that just came on and made like such a fucking huge splash on the show. Like, she is up there. It's legendary. But I saw this post and they were kind of like, wait, so Monica's the villain when she had a whole account dedicated to exposing the fraud con woman monster that is Jen Shah, but Heather is the hero who protected her for years. And it's like, yeah, it's true, because we even found out on the episode that Jen Shah is the one that gave Heather that black eye, which a lot of us did suspect. And Heather protected her, I think, because she didn't want her to get extra time in her case, because it would have affected her case, because she was on trial or whatever the hell it was. I don't remember the particulars of it, but it wouldn't have been good when you're on trial for like fraud and then you've assaulted somebody and given them, like, it was a pretty bad black eye. It was like, it looks like very violent. Like, she was acting like an abused wife, Heather was. And the reason that Salt Lake City was so fucking infuriating for so long is because Jen Shah truly was the worst on every level. Like, she was so unlikable. She was just, the crimes that she committed, even before the crimes, she was horrible, but like the crimes she committed were just heinous. The way she used the race card, the aggression, the attention seeking, like, you know, you can't say one nice thing about her. And every season of the show, one of the women, with the exception, I think, of Mary, who seemed to have her number from day one, but the women would like befriend her. And your head would be spinning and you're like, how are they sticking up for this person? And like, I remember Meredith was my favorite for the first 2 years because she seemed like the most normal, which is so funny to see because now she's like one of the most crazy, but she seemed like the most normal. And then in season two, she was kind of like the only one that was really, and her and Mary were the only ones that were like going at Jen Shah. And I was like, thank God. And like, that was the only thing keeping me watching because I felt like Jen Shah was so awful and I couldn't understand how like Lisa and Heather, and I really liked Heather Gay, so it would do my head in. I'm like, why are they defending her? Like, I even interviewed Heather Gay, I think for season three, and that is on my Patreon as well, if you dig back. And I asked her and I'm like, girl, you're like in the Manson family, like this, I don't understand this. And I remember with Meredith, I was liking her, and then season three started, and then suddenly Meredith's friends with Jen Shah, and I'm like, is Jen Shah, like, blackmailing her? And I couldn't do it. It enraged me. And then, of course, you see that when they get rid of Jen Shah, they have the best season they've ever had. Like, the show reaches, you know, breaks the stratosphere, goes to another fucking galaxy. It's so good that they got rid of her. And, it's kind of like, yeah, is Monica really the villain? I mean, yes, she is, because it goes beyond just to expose Jen Shah. Like, she's crazy, but they're all crazy. So they're all crazy together. But it's hard to hate somebody, even though I liked her from the start, but just overall, it's hard to hate somebody that helped take down the worst person that's ever been on Bravo. And Monica faces the music and she doesn't run from it, and she doesn't run from a fight. She's not LVP who's doing things behind the scenes and then you get caught and it's like, oh, I can't come to the reunion now. She's not Jen Shah and Garcelle that do things behind the scenes and they get called out, oh, you're a racist. Like, she stands up, speaks in her truth, gives it as good as she gets. She's phenomenal. Is she going to be back next season? I have no idea, because nobody on the show is talking to her. She has no friends on there. And I can understand why, like, you know, with what she did and the way she lied, she even lied about, like, I mean, she could have stolen the purse from Meredith. We don't know, but she said she didn't, but she also said she'd never been in Meredith's store before. And she's like, oh my God, this is my first time I've ever been here. And then they play the security cam footage of her in there with Jen Shah. So it's like, they can't trust her. And this crazy bunch of women, even though they do backstab each other for the show, and, you know, they've all been involved in things of sending each other DMs and getting DMs from fans and then spilling the tea on camera and stuff, they do have a sort of camaraderie because they all started it together. Whereas or they're real friends. They're either real friends or they're co-stars that have been on this from, like, you know, ground zero, whereas Monica's come in and it's just, yeah. But then Monica also is, like, so popular with the viewers at this point. She's so dramatic. She's, how do you not have her? So I think maybe a solution would be, like, have her back as a friend next season, and maybe we can just see her kind of, like, meet with some of the girls and try to make amends, and then see if that gets anywhere. Maybe you can film her a little bit by herself. I don't know. It reminds me actually of Ashley from Southern Charm. She's one of the iconic villains. She came onto Southern Charm as Thomas Ravenel's new girlfriend, and she was like the most hated person on Bravo at that point. I mean, she was really, 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 really hated. And she went against Catherine, which unfortunately for her happened to coincide with a time period when Bravo decided to give Catherine a good edit, even though Catherine is another sort of, she's pretty irredeemable to me, but she somehow became the centerpiece of the show, and they couldn't have her just be the villain every season, because you need a sort of, the center character has to be someone you can root for. So they spent a couple of years of being like, oh, Catherine's like got her act together and she's like a good mom now, even though of course she wasn't. And you know, Ashley was being nasty too, don't get me wrong, and she was like completely unhinged but she was calling around, she was so hated, and she was such a big villain on there, even though she never was even a main cast member. I don't think that even after Thomas left the show, because he like sexually assaulted somebody or something, they kind of like brought Ashley back in for a couple of scenes to see if she could make amends with people. Sorry, guys, I'm back. I just got cut off. Someone fucking rang my doorbell, which makes Chunky just like bark like crazy, and it wasn't even to do with me. I'm like, who the fuck is this? And then it's some woman asking me if I know if some older lady is next door, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it is weird, the house next door, like I never ever see anyone there, and I'm always like, does anyone live there or not? And sometimes I see the lawn being mowed, but it seems to be like they hire some girl, I don't know. But this person's like asking me like, so you don't know if Lorraine lives there? And I'm like, no. And like Chunky's like barking, and it's like, you've just interrupted my like pod. It's just, that's one of the things with small towns, is that people still think they can just come and like knock on your door randomly. It's like, no, you actually can't. Like, sorry, this isn't 1980. You know, we don't just like drop over to people's houses and like ding dong the doorbell. Unless I know that you're coming in advance, or you're, you know, the Amazon delivery or like DoorDash or something. Like, when you live in the city in an apartment, you don't get people just coming and like knocking at the door. Like, sometimes you'll get people ring the buzzer, but like, fuck off. Anyway, I'm like in the middle of doing my podcast and they've like thrown me off or saying something about Ashley. But yeah, Ashley from Southern Charm, she comes back. And they tried to have her make amends with the group, and the group didn't accept her back. But because I remember she sat down with Naomi, and Naomi was like, yeah, we have nothing to talk about. And it was really weird, actually, with Ashley, because it was like obvious that Ashley just wanted to like be on the show. She's like, I want to be friends now. And they're like, you're like the worst person ever, and we weren't even like friends with you before. And then she also crashed like a group event and was like, hi, everyone. And like, it was just so awkward. But anyway, maybe they should do something like that with Monica, and then just have her try to work on building her relationships. Because, yeah, look, I know these shows are kind of like fake and none of the people are really friends anyway, and they're just co-workers. But when you have like a whole group that are like, we absolutely do not want to like sit down and work with this person, like, it's pretty hard to do. Although they're doing it on New Jersey with Teresa and Melissa, so maybe they can make it work. Either way, Monica has a future in reality TV, because just this one season alone will be enough to get her on like House of Villains and Traitors. And she probably will be on the Traitors next season, because, and they'll reference this storyline and they'll be like, you know, she'll be like, well, I was, you know, reality Von Teese, and now I'm a traitor. Because she's leaning into it. Like, you go to her Instagram, she's doing like photo shoots with the Reality Von Teese logo and, you know, doing Instagram lives and stuff. She is loving it. Now, the speculation is, was this, you know, fake? And I'm seeing all these theories and stuff there. And I feel like some people are going overboard. Again, I feel like people, the Bravo viewers especially, because people are so, their brains have been fried from all of this true crime crap, which most of that is just, you know, overproduced as, I mean, it's, yeah, that's all just reality TV as well, essentially. people make a true crime plot out of everything. And yes, Salt Lake City is a show that has people with multiple identities and homeland security arrests and imprisonments and cults and all kinds of crazy stuff. So, I mean, it does kind of like fit under the true crime genre, but I think people are going a little bit overboard with having conspiracies about how fake this whole thing was. So, look, I think what happened, I think it was more in the editing than the production. Of course, I think that Heather and the other women were probably having conversations about Monica's identity. I don't know if they would have said directly she was Reality Von Teese, but I'm sure they were having conversations about like, oh, we think something's up with Monica. And they wouldn't have shown that because they want the big reveal to be on the finale. And then, of course, you have producers coming in. Like, once Heather figures out who she is, production are going to go, absolutely do not speak to any of the women. We need you to tell them for the first time on the beach, and we're going to make it really dramatic, and we're going to make it look like Big Little Lies. And then you have Heather, who is, she's very like on, because the way she speaks in her confessionals and in the scenes, it did look like she had a script, but I really think that's just how she speaks, because I interviewed her and she kind of spoke like that. She's very on. She's a salesperson, like she exceeds in sales. And I read her freaking Bad Mormon book, and she was talking all about her sales experience. And she's the type of person that probably would listen to Tony Robbins in the car. She is from the Mormon faith, where she went out and was a missionary and was like preaching to people. So she just speaks like that. And she's like the force multiplier of the show. She's like the Kyle Richards. She's the narrator. She's kind of like the most normal one. None of them are normal, but I guess she's like kind of the most normal one out of all of them. So yeah, I think honestly that was just her being her. And yeah, she wants to give a show. They know they're on a fucking television show. So even though it's you know, real, it's very produced, it's very edited, and they're kind of performing, but you know, I'm not going so deep on this that, I mean, I saw one podcast that was saying that Bravo paid Heather's hairstylist. I mean, it was just like, they were just going way too down the rabbit hole. It's like, it's not that deep. And people also think, did Bravo production know that Monica was behind Reality Von Teese? I don't think so. I don't know how they would know she was behind that account, but you know, I do think that Monica, because she's very upfront, she wanted to be on television, and her very first episode of Salt Lake City, like one of her first confessionals, right? She goes out to lunch with Angie Kay and Lisa, and she's like being all nice to them. And then they cut to her confessional and she's like, these women act like they have the perfect lives, but I know all their secrets and I'm going to expose them. So I'm sure that when Monica interviewed with production, which she probably reached out to production herself, okay? She probably has been trying again. Like, she probably was contacting production last season as well. And then she probably reached out to them again this season and was like, I used to work for Jen Shah. I was an informant. I know so much about these girls, like, you know, and was just putting it all out there. And hey, Jen Shah was a big character. They needed a big character. They needed drama. And they went with that. And then it probably even exceeded what they were expecting. So that's my take on Salt Lake. And you know, I love them all, love the whole cast. I hope everyone's back. I hope Mary's back. I hope Angie Kay is back. Yeah, I want them all. I hope Jenny Nguyen is back. I don't think that'll happen, but I would love if they brought Jenny back. I wonder if Monica knows Jenny. I did see that Monica was on her Instagram live with that Dana, you know, the one from season 3 that had the gray streak in her hair. And she was another one that went after Jen Shah, which I loved. And she had a scene that they they put it in the trailer and then they cut it out of the show for some reason, which I couldn't believe because it was probably like the best scene of the whole last season. And then they released it on like YouTube as like never before seen footage. And Dana went up to Jen Shah and she said something like, you know, you better watch your mouth if you want me to put some money on your books. Cause that's when Jen was like about to go off to the fucking slammer. So maybe they could bring her back. I feel like they have a nice little pool. They have that Angie Harrington woman. Although she did the Juicy Scoop podcast and was kind of like exposing the show and like exposing Lisa Barlow and stuff. So I don't know if they would have her back at this point, but like, yeah, I would like Dana and Jenny Nguyen back and, you know, whoever else, maybe a friend of Monica's that can connect. I don't know. They can figure it out, but I'm definitely back on board with Salt Lake City. I feel like now Salt Lake City is kind of my show and, I'll keep supporting it until Jen Shah is back. Okay, outside of reality TV, I'm obsessed with The Curse. It is my favorite show right now. It's Nathan Fielder and Emma Stone. And Emma Stone plays this like eco-friendly, sort of liberal progressive that has a reality show where she's making these, they're called passive homes. And there are these environmentally friendly homes. They're ridiculous. It's so funny, but I don't want to get into it too much now, actually, because I might have somebody come on and we'll just talk about the whole series more. But I just want to say that it's my favorite and it's definitely not for everyone, because if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, the audience score is really low, even though the critical score is very high, which I feel like usually when those things happen, I tend to prefer the audience score because sometimes the critics will just give something good reviews because it like, you know, ticks their diversity quotas or whatever. But I think this one is just a case of it's going over people's heads. I think people are seeing that Emma Stone is in it and then they're tuning in thinking that they're going to get something more mainstream. And, you know, they're being a little shocked because I've been like testing the temperature on this one with people and people either completely love it and are utterly obsessed like I am, or they just like couldn't even get through the first episode. So yeah, certainly not for everyone, but I think it's brilliant. It's a little bit like when everyone got into The White Lotus, especially season 2, that really took off and everyone was like so fixated on the murder mystery. It's like, it's not a murder mystery show though. Like they literally just put that as like a hook to like get, you know, keep the attention span of the dummies. It's kind of like that, but it's like if it didn't have a murder mystery. So, yeah, but it's amazing. But something I did watch, and I've been going back and forth on like, do I want to cover this or not? Not out of fear of like offending anybody or anything. I just didn't know if I could be bothered. But there's a new George Floyd documentary that is sort of revealing the quote unquote truth about George Floyd and BLM called The Fall of Minneapolis. It's been going viral. It's been out for a few months, but it's gone viral. It's been, you know, promoted on all of the sort of conservative podcasts out there, you know, like the Megyn Kellys of the world, etc. Even though you guys know that I have disowned Megyn Kelly now, she was formerly my mother. Now she is, you know, we are unrelated. I don't know her. I don't claim her, but she has promoted it. And I was thinking, you know, I did do the original BLM expose, the Candace Owens one, a couple of years ago when I had Kiki on, so I thought I'd follow it up with this. I just want to say, first of all, it's completely biased and one-sided, right? So the narrative is all in Derek Chauvin's favor, and it's kind of like, you know, against George Floyd and against the whole BLM movement, and really gets into the damage that the movement caused, but it's not showing both sides of the story, so you just have to be aware of that. And that's not that big of a deal, because obviously we got the whole George Floyd side of it from all of the mainstream media for years, so I don't think that it's such a big deal that now there's a completely biased documentary out in the other direction. Just don't watch it thinking that you're getting the full truth of everything from watching this. You really need to kind of like look at both sides and go do your research, which I would say with anything. It's you know what it's like? It's like the Casey Anthony Peacock documentary. So I wasn't that educated on the whole Casey Anthony thing, right? So I started watching that documentary and I was like, girl, free Casey. She's innocent. I can't believe they did this to this poor girl, you know, because it was all her side of the story. And then people were messaging me going, no, like, she's a monster. And then, of course, I looked into it more and I'm like, oh, this, like, documentaries. This is not objective, okay? We're just getting one side of this. But again, I thought, let Casey have her say. She's entitled to have her own documentary in her own words after, you know, being vilified by Nancy Grace and all those people. It's like, let's have both sides of the story out, then we can all look into it and make our own mind. And, you know, I made up my own mind on Casey Anthony, and she's, you know, a baby killer, or her dad's a baby killer. I can't even remember now, but she ain't a good person. So this is the Casey Anthony documentary of, like, BLM. There's a big discrepancy about how George Floyd died. Was it the knee on the neck, or was it all of the fentanyl and the drugs in his system? There were two autopsies, and the first one was kind of, like, covered up. They did a second one where they said it was definitely the knee. The first autopsy said that he had a fatal level of fentanyl in his system and that it easily could have killed him, but they also showed that there was some kind of trauma on his lung from, you know, having the knee on him for being down for 8 minutes and however long it was. So, like, that could have killed him. But you look at the facts of that, it makes it feel a little unclear. You definitely look at that and you're not like, okay, he definitely died from the knee on the neck. You're a bit like, he could have died either way. Like, it's hard to say. They go over a lot of evidence that was, like, left out and that wasn't able to be in the trial. Like, the way that they show the knee on the neck from a different angle, and it looks completely different to what they were showing in the media. And they also have this training manual that shows that he was using a technique that was in a police manual that they were all assigned, and they didn't let them use that in the trial, which is crazy. And they also show you extra body cam footage that we haven't seen before. So you see everything from the beginning to the end, and you see the new angles on it, and it certainly makes it look a lot different. I mean, if you guys are following the January 6th stuff, the, you know, the insurrectionists or whatever, which that's not been a story that I've been heavily into, right? The Jan 6 stuff, but they released all these extra tapes. And it was kind of interesting because, of course, the news showed you the highlights of, like, the very, very worst moments of January 6th, all sort of snipped together back to back. And then you see all of, you know, these hundreds of hours or whatever that they released of the new stuff, and you're just seeing people, like, you know, walking in there, and I don't know, it just paints a little bit of a different picture. So that's what we get with the George Floyd body cam footage. It does look different. It certainly does not look like a bunch of cops just went and murdered George Floyd. And I think a lot of people know that two of the cops out of the, because I think four were charged. Derek Chauvin was, like, the face of it, but I think about four were charged and incarcerated, and two of them were not white. No, I think one was black and one was Asian. And that was sort of something that, I mean, a lot of people knew this already, but it definitely was not highlighted. You know, it certainly wasn't, like, part of the mainstream media narrative. They really made, like, you know, Derek Chauvin, I mean, he was the one with the knee at the end of the day, but they did want to paint it out like a bunch of racist cop killers. And then, you know, so the things that didn't fit the narrative that they wanted to paint, the media wanted to paint, that stuff was not highlighted so much. There was a lot more with how, you know, how he famously was calling for his mother and saying he can't breathe. He used to do that all the time. They showed, like, footage of, like, a previous arrest where he was doing that stuff. And he actually would put on, like, a childlike act, I think, to try and get sympathy from law enforcement and probably to make himself look less threatening. And you could argue that that's a defense mechanism. You could say that he's doing that because he's, you know, he's scared he's being racially profiled and he could be the victim of a cop killing, if that's what your argument wants to be. You could say that, or you could also say that he is a criminal because he does have a long rap sheet, and that was a manipulation tactic for him because he is a big guy. He was somewhere between 6'4 and 6'7, big black guy, you know, rap sheet, tattoos, on drugs most of the time. So yeah, he would put on, you know, the crying and the whinging and the carrying on. That wasn't all natural. You know, when you see it out of context, just in the, you know, the video where he died, it looks a certain way, but then you see some of the old footage in it, you see the whole thing, and you're like, okay, again, bit of a different context to this. And I think the biggest takeaway for me from the documentary was not that I think Derek Chauvin is innocent, because, you know, when I got to the end of it, I'm like, oh my God, he is innocent. And then I Googled and I'm like, oh, they left this out, they left that out. Like, you know, they did not put anything negative about him at all. Like, they didn't even present all the facts of the autopsy. Like, they only showed the facts of the autopsy that suited their narrative, which was that he didn't kill George Floyd, whereas there's things in the autopsy that say that he did, and they didn't highlight that. They didn't mention that Derek Chauvin had complaints before of using excessive force, although I don't have all the facts written out in front of me, but I know that he'd had some kind of complaints, but I think they were investigated and there was never action taken because they were kind of unsubstantiated. Of course, you could say that that's from, like, you know, police corruption or whatever, that the cops get away with it. I mean, sure. But yeah, but my takeaway was that he didn't get a fair trial, okay? Because mostly the magnitude of the media coverage and, like, the civil unrest at the time, it was fucking impossible to give him a fair trial. So even take away, you know, the extra evidence that I feel like was left out and stuff, you could not get an impartial jury. And they go into that and about how the jury, it was a tainted jury and they kind of, like, didn't care. And then they also play footage of the riots in Minneapolis at the time. And it's so shocking. Like, I know that we all saw it on the news, or if you lived in America or around there at the time, you saw it in person. Like, you know, I know someone that kind of lived amongst a lot of it at some time. They were almost, like, traumatized. They, you know, were locked in their apartment and they said, you know, I was so scared. They were banging on the doors down the bottom. Like, you know, we thought they were going to come in and, like, kill us. And you just see the footage played back. It's unbelievable. Like, it looks like a third world militia coup. I mean, it caused, like, between $1 and $2 billion of damage for nothing. You know what I mean? Like, for nothing. Like, people were setting buildings on fire, you know, obviously looting all of the stores. And then you had all these Democratic politicians, including Kamala Harris, who's now the fucking vice president, egging it on publicly and supporting it, which is so nuts because, of course, you know, they have this whole thing about Trump saying he's an insurrectionist when he tweeted or he said, go forth peacefully or whatever. By the way, he's never been charged for that, which is crazy. All of this hoopla about it, he's never even been charged and they're using it to, like, take him off ballots. That's all he did. Then you have Democrats saying, like, we're not going to stop, like, you know, keep making your voices heard, like, get out there, like, you know, I can't remember what they were saying, but they were literally inciting it and fueling it to the tune of, you know, $1 to $2 billion of damage. 25 people died, I think that's the number. People died. And she's the vice president. And then Trump is, they're saying that's disqualifying with him. It's like, okay, compare Jan 6 to BLM, whatever. I know it's a different context because they're saying they were trying to, like, you know, overthrow the election counting, but even if they were, BLM's still worse. Like, the BLM riots are still fucking worse. The rioters ransacked, like, police stations. They went through police stations. Like, that's not something that happens in a healthy, functioning civil society. Obviously, we're all really privileged to be in, you know, wherever you're listening from, America, the UK, Australia, you know, Sweden, all these, like, great places, you know, Tokyo, wherever you're listening from, right? I'm sure if you're from, you know, I don't think you're fighting, like, Sudanese militias right now, okay? Over in, like, Africa and having your, like, village burned down or something. That's what the fucking BLM riots looked like. It's like, that's not, it's one of those things where you're like, that's not meant to happen over here. And it did. And you look at it again And it's just, it's very, 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 very shocking. It's like we memory hold it all, like on top of the COVID stuff. But it's, you know, we move past things so quickly, which is strange because it's like it wasn't a small thing. It was like the police were fearing for their lives. Like the police in the documentary, they interview a bunch from the Minneapolis like police department. They have all have like PTSD and they're traumatized, and they do the numbers of how like people aren't signing up to be cops anymore because of all the hatred against cops and, you know, defund the police movement. Oh yeah, that's another thing. Defund the fucking police. That whole thing. It's like, what? Have you seen the crime going around? Like, I don't think that just, you know, solving crime is just more police. Obviously, you know, there's systemic issues and economics, whatever. It's like a big broad thing, but it's like the answer isn't just like less police. Like, shut the fuck up. And in the documentary, they also talk about how, I think at the height of the riots in Minneapolis, that they needed like military intervention or like the National Guard, and they didn't get it because optics wise, they weren't allowed, because it would have looked like the government was like clamping down. It would have looked like a repressive government that had drove the military in to like stop people protesting against, you know, a racially motivated, you know, killing. It would have looked like fucking complete like fascism, which even though it wasn't, but the optics would have looked like that. So they left these cops out there on their fucking own to fend for themselves. And I think that the National Guard ended up coming in later in certain instances at certain protests and stuff, but really it should have been like, I mean, it should have been like the full military deployed to like get these people off the streets. And the reason I kind of bring it up is that I was bamboozled by BLM at the time, never the organization. I never trusted giving money to BLM as an organization. And I also, throughout the whole thing, with all of the protests and the riots, I kind of thought to myself, like, this is such a shame that this movement doesn't have like a figurehead to ask for something specific. Cause I could see that it was I could see that it was chaos going on. I don't think that I fully comprehended the level of destruction that was going on. I don't think that I fully wrapped my head around that, but I did think to myself, like, is this really going to achieve anything? Cause there's no one's running this movement. You know, you could get anything you wanted. Like, you could, with that amount of people mobilized on the streets, it was, you know, pretty much the biggest protests in history. With this amount of people, you could demand anything from the government. You could get free healthcare. You could like stop wars. You get like whatever you want, because it was such a powerful movement. And instead it was like, let's loot a fucking Target and steal a TV and like, you know, knock monuments down and just like destroy our beautiful cities and turn them into like crime ridden dumps, like a post-apocalyptic movie. Like, that's what you did. But I was very bamboozled by it originally. When the news started to come out, I remember that, you know, George Floyd had this long rap sheet and that he had been involved in like a burglary that I think he held a gun to someone's stomach. I think there was some misinformation that he held up a pregnant woman. I think that was actually fake. That was, you know, something that conservative media had driven, but I believe there was like a toddler in the house. It was like, you know, five thugs came into this house with, you know, guns. Someone got, I think, beaten in the head with a gun, and then they took their stuff and left. And there's a toddler in there. You know, even if there wasn't a toddler in there, it's a disgrace. Imagine people coming into your house on drugs and like stealing from you. And yeah, he had a long rap sheet. Like, it wasn't the worst rap sheet in the world. And of course, having a bad, you know, having a long rap sheet doesn't justify being killed by the police. But at the start of BLM, I didn't even want to hear that stuff. I was like, that doesn't justify it. Like, I was like defensive to hear it. And then he was a porn star. Did you know that? And I remember when I heard that, I'm like, that's disgusting. I'm like, he was not a porn star. Like, that's obviously a right-wing conspiracy. And I don't think anyone's ever, I don't think any mainstream outlet has like done the dive and like proved that he did porn before, because I think it was seen as so distasteful. But I was like Googling it and, you know, looking at the porn video versus him. I mean, it's like the same tattoos and everything. Like, it's like 99-something% him. And of course, again, because you do porn doesn't mean you deserve to be killed. But it's kind of like, you know, they made this person a saint off of a narrative that was false. Like, even if he was the victim of police brutality, it wasn't like he was this innocent black man that was just, you know, waltzing along and then like five racist cops like lynched him and killed him. It's like, no, this was like a degenerate crackhead porn star that was, you know, fucking high on drugs, and this was not, you know, we don't need to have murals of this person everywhere and worship this person and make them a saint, and you know what I mean? Like, it was just crazy. And at the time, I was upset by it. Like, I cried when I saw the video when it first leaked, you know, when the whole world watched the video. It definitely brought tears to my eyes. When people criticized him, I just thought it was like right-wingers being racist. And I even thought that the riots were protests. I didn't want to call them riots. I was like, no, they're protesting, because I do believe in protests. Like, I'm not mad at like the climate protesters, you know, when the annoying climate protesters like block the roads and stuff. You know, I definitely support all the Palestinian protesters blocking the roads and shit. Like, I think protesting is like very important along with free speech. But these clearly were not protests. These were violent riots that were destroying property and destroying the fucking country. And the fact that I had been brainwashed by the media to think that criticism of it was, you know, racist or right-wing conspiracy theory is crazy, because I don't usually buy into those things. I'm usually the person that is like, hang on, guys, you're all being sucked in by this. Like, here, look at the real facts. This is what's actually going on. And I bought into a big portion of it. And it wasn't until, like, I remember when I started questioning it was when I saw, I think it was via Fox News, actually, all these like black-owned business owners were like, please, like, stop destroying our stores. And I'm like, wait, they're like destroying like black businesses too? And I think I remember thinking at the start, I'm like, wait, is this just Fox News like plucking out like one black business out of like nowhere to try and like put their narrative? But then I looked into that a bit more, and then I'm seeing like, hang on, like half of these protesters are like white, like Antifa types. And then I started to be like, okay, like this like isn't a good thing. The thing is that the truth is always out there. It's not like we don't know and then 2 years later, the truth comes out. The truth is out there on the majority of issues. It's just, do you want to see it or not? You know, like, are you just going to go along with the crowd and what the mainstream media is saying? Or are you going to like do your own, quote unquote, do your own research on this shit and then find out for yourself? Like, that's where I am on the whole October 7 situation, because I'm so deep in that. And I'm looking at like everything. I'm looking at what like the Israeli government and journalists and stuff are saying on television there. I'm looking at left-wing media. I'm looking at right-wing media. I'm looking at independent media. I'm watching the social media footage. Like, I'm very into it. And then I see people that, you know, because I post about it sometimes. I have to be careful about how much I post and what I do post, because I am going to the US, and you can get put on lists and blacklisted and not hired and all kinds of things. So I have to sort of like tiptoe around it a bit. And then I get people that message me and they're like, you know, why are you posting? I mean, I get messages of people saying thank you for posting, because so many people that are in my, you know, arena of podcasting and stuff are just like not speaking out because they're all trying to protect their jobs and stuff. Whereas I'm still posting about it as much as I can, I feel like, without like destroying my livelihood. So I get people messaging me, supporting me, but I get other people that are either unfollowing me or, you know, they're just messaging me with like fucking Ben Shapiro, Megyn Kelly talking points and stuff. And I'm like, you really have no idea like what's going on here. And this is going to look so bad in a year or, you know, a year or 2 years from now, whatever, whenever it's like can come out in the mainstream properly. And people can like face the fucking music. So the truth is always out there on everything. The truth was out there on COVID, which is why anytime someone says, oh, but you know, they didn't know. I'm like, you know, they fucking knew. We all fucking knew. You just didn't want to see it. So this George Floyd documentary, these jurors could not have delivered any other verdict other than guilty. Or I think that they would have either had their lives ruined long term by, like, you know, BLM activists, basically, would have made their lives hell, or I think that they could have maybe been, like, killed. Even if they weren't going to be killed by the rioters, it would be a plausible, realistic fear that they would have felt like they could have been killed if they didn't deliver a guilty verdict. And I'm definitely not saying that Derek Chauvin is innocent at all, and that's not me doing a cop-out thing of, like, you know, trying to hedge my bets of, like, oh, I don't want to be, like, the Derek Chauvin supporter. Like, if I was, like, fully on Derek Chauvin's side, like, I wouldn't have a problem saying it, especially now, because that moment's kind of over, and, you know, I wouldn't give a fuck. But I do think that, you know, they left stuff out, and yeah, I'm not fully convinced, and I basically think that, like, I definitely think him holding Derek Chauvin on the ground for that long killed him. If he hadn't swallowed all this fucking fentanyl and drugs, I think what happens is, like, when the cops come over, he, like, swallows all the drugs at once to hide them, so he doesn't, like, have it on his body when they search him, because they played, like, an old arrest where he had done that. So, of course, if he wasn't pumped full of drugs, I think he would have survived. And if he hadn't been using a counterfeit bill, and if he, you know, hadn't been a crackhead and all of this stuff. But I think at best you can say that it was manslaughter. I certainly don't think that, it was manslaughter, and it was a mistrial. It should be called, it should be thrown out as a fucking mistrial. They should redo the trial, honestly, with all the evidence. And now that some of this moment has, like, passed, they should look at his, I know he's been trying to appeal it, but he got fucking stabbed in prison. Did you guys see that? Somehow, I don't know how he was left alone. Like, that could have been a setup. He was left alone and, like, stabbed, like, 20 fucking times or something. And now, or 10 times, I don't want to, you know, misquote us. Sure, someone will leave me a review. That fucking Bravo troll person probably will. And then he said that Derek Chauvin was stabbed 20 times. It was actually 9. Get your facts right. But, yeah, it's fucked up. Is there anything else? Okay, I guess that's about it. I'll just keep waffling on. If you want more Bravo stuff, obviously on my Patreon, I will, you know, get into all of this Beverly Hills bullshit with Garcelle on the next Patreon and whatever else is going on. I've actually just started watching Southern Hospitality, and God, is there anything else? No, I think that's it. All right, guys, thank you for listening. Have a happy new year, and thanks for all of your support, and yeah, bye.